No, I thought that was really good.
All right. All right. If you're still here, kudos, because, yeah, that's been a long video. We're going to talk about that session today. And we're at Dominic's place, so thank you very much for the sandwich, the coffee. Super cool. And honestly, I'm kind of exhausted. When I got out of the car, I really felt like, wow, that was sport.
We started off thinking, yeah, we'll do maybe 10, 15 kilometers. We ended up doing 30.
Oh, wow. I didn't even check.
Well, it was 5, then 15, and then a 10. So
that's why.
Yeah, that'll be why.
Because last time I went, it was not good. We just went out on the water for 10 minutes. And then, yeah, we stopped. And today, I thought, like, well, it's going to be the downwinder. It's going to be easy. Because, yeah, we used four-wheel drive, obviously. But I thought, well, it's like an e-bike. You just go, and it's not exhausting. But for me, it was. Maybe because I'm a novice at this. But it was really cool. And as you've seen in the video, it's so easy to get on foil. Even when at first it was a little more difficult. You told me what to do. Can you maybe tell people who begin or want to go downwinding on a foil drive, how do you get actually on the board?
Okay, so first of all, the best place to start, I think, is just to make people aware that foil drive is one of many different ways that allows you to get up on foils. So you can have a paddle, the SUP board. You can arm power, prone paddling. You can have a wind wing. You can get towed up by a winch or by a boat or a jet ski. I'm sure there's more, but you can also pull the trigger on the remote, and the motor, the foil drive motor, will give you the thrust that you need to be able to build up the speed, and then you're up on foil. And from there, the beauty is that you can be foiling around with the motor out of the water, and it's almost like it's not there anymore. So the method of getting up on foil, really, with foil drive, is to lie on the board, pull the trigger, keep your weight forward to keep the board flat. You don't want the board coming up, otherwise it'll tip you off the back. Build up speed, and then you can take your time. You can take your time at coming up to your knees, stabilizing yourself, and then coming up to your feet. Or when you get better, you can just wait until the perfect moment, and then you can do your pop-up however you like to do it.
When is that perfect moment?
That's a really good question. I don't think anybody's asked me exactly that, but that is a really good question. For me, the perfect moment of when to actually come up in terms of speed is you definitely don't want to be going so fast that it engages the lift from the foil. If you're starting to lift up the board off the water, that's too late. You need to be going fast enough so that when you stand up or pop up, you don't sink the board because that'll stall it.
Yeah.
But you need to, yeah, you don't want to be going fast enough that you actually start to come up on foil before you stand up.
Because the tip you get, because the first time I went out, I was falling a lot. And I think at the end, I didn't need that many tries. And you said that I have to be like going up the wave. As soon as I see the wave in front of me, then I have to accelerate.
Yeah. So it's slightly different from what you were doing today. You were using foil drive in a downwinding situation. So the swell. And if you're using foil drive to get up on flat water, you can do the whole process whenever you like in your own time. But when there's swell and you're on, you know, you were on what, a neutral or a negative volume board today? What was?
No. Well, yeah, it was probably neutral. It was 74.
Yeah. So for most people, that's a small board when you're talking about downwinding.
Okay.
So you've got to time your takeoff with the swell. If you get it wrong, it can actually impede you and prevent you from getting up on foil. So all I did was to tell you, to make you aware of the best time to accelerate. And I think I said, when let one bit of swell go underneath you. And as soon as you see that bump moving away from you, really pull hard on the trigger and accelerate. And you will feel, if you time it right, you will feel the next bump pick you up. Mm-hmm. And then you can really ease off the throttle. In fact, it's probably a good idea to ease off the throttle. Otherwise, you catapult out of the water. But the idea is that you let that bump pick you up from behind,
yeah.
and then it's doing most of the work. So if you time it wrong and you pull the trigger in the wrong place, then if that bump from behind you, if you're not going at the right speed by the time it gets to you, it will go underneath you. And as it goes underneath you, it pulls you back and it kills your speed and mm-hmm. it almost sucks the board into the water. It's sort of like for those people who are on their downwinding journey and they know, they'll know what I mean here. It's that if you try to pump over the bump in front of you, it just kills all of the speed, kills all of your energy, and it pulls you down off, you know, you lose height from the mast and it drags you back again. So if you're on the front of a bump or on top or on the front of a bump, it'll give you all that lift and all that speed because you're in the energy zone and it's pushing you forwards.
And then once you have that speed, you can eventually overtake a wave.
It's different while starting. That's a different kettle of fish because, I mean, if you're talking about trying to pump over a bump, then that's super difficult. If you're talking about, you know, you've got a lot of speed, you're high on the mast, and you're moving through the bumps, then yes, especially with a super fast high aspect foil, you can then pump over a bump. But for most people, especially in the learning stages, that's not recommended.
Yeah. But it was actually, I think, easier than in the flat for me, because in the flat video somewhere up here, I had some trouble because I wasn't used to putting that much weight on the front foot.
Mm.
And here it wasn't that of an issue because even if the foil shot out, I was already kind of on the bump and then the nose tilted down, which accelerated, but that's what I wanted anyway.
Yeah.
And in the flat, it gets out and whoosh, you're in the water and you stop. And here it actually helped. So it's kind of easier, or if I made a mistake like that, it was helpful.
Kudos to you because you had the confidence to really go for it. And if you do have the confidence to do exactly what you've just said, then yes, I think it is easier getting up on foil in swell in those downwinding conditions because as the bump behind you, you're accelerating, as the bump behind you picks you up and gives you that little bit of acceleration, then the trick is to really, as you stand up, you push down on the nose of the board and it sort of self-levels. You go down. If you don't push down on the board, you literally just get thrown up into the air. So I think for a lot of people, most people, taking off, learning that whole full drive takeoff is going to be easier in flat water. And they need to master that first before they go into a downwind situation. But you've had what, 1 week using full drive on and off in Lake Garda?
Yes, I used 3 or 4 batteries there. Yeah.
Okay. And then, well, that's pretty much it for full drive and your experience on it. So I think you did really, really well. You say that you're not a very good downwinder, but trust me, you're taking it up very, very quickly because that you've got a very good awareness of the timing that you need. I look at each bump that comes from behind. I look at that as the same technique of taking off with a wave, if you're prone or sup foiling. You've got to match the speed of the bump, the wave coming behind you. And once you do, then you need to pop up or just control the pitch of the board. So if that's the bump, then as you're taking off, you then have to control the angle of the board to match that the face of the wave. Otherwise, if you've got a steep wave or a steep bump and you're not pointing in the same direction of it, you just shoot out and breach straight away. So you've got to have the confidence to push down on the nose of the board as you are taking off, as you are popping up. If you do that, then you might end up, your first few attempts, you might end up burying the nose and going over. But it's a learning process. And I think we all learn by mistakes. So you'll do that maybe once or twice, and then you'll realize, oh, not so much pressure on the nose.
Yeah.
And you'll find that it's very easy to find the balance of how much pressure you need to put.
What I think was a little bit better over time, and yes, as you said, it's a learning process, so hopefully it gets better over time.
Oh, it will.
Was to manage that trigger. because it's super sensitive. But and when I did it in the flat, I was like, as soon as I heard the motor like do this farting noise, then I immediately stopped. And that's, I think, the worst thing you can do.
Yes and no. When the props come out of the water, you lose all thrust, obviously, because it's not pushing water anymore. So if you keep a lot of pressure on the trigger, then as soon as the motor goes down and you're suddenly getting a burst of acceleration, which will sort of force you forwards and up at the same time, and it makes it very difficult to control. So when you hear that spluttering noise of the props coming out, I always sort of just ease off a little bit.
Okay.
Because I know that if I keep a real high throttle by pulling the trigger a lot, when the props go in the water, it's just going to...
All right. So it probably depends of your stance, obviously. But for me in the flat, always when the motor came out, I was standing so much to the front that the nose went down immediately.
Yeah.
So then it's good to have that thrust to move the board back up.
That's true. That's true. But what you're not used to yet, and you will do very quickly with experience, is that whole weight, shifting your weight forwards and back, what I call a motor transition. When you have a motor transition from using the motor to not using the motor, you have to shift your weight backwards to prevent the nose from diving. Because let's start again at the beginning. When you're motoring along with the propellers fully engaged in the water, it's creating a lot of forward thrust, but it's also trying to push the nose of the board up. So you are, when you're motoring around, you've always got more weight on your front foot. Maybe you're even leaning your whole body mass over your front foot. Some people even move their front foot further forwards in order to keep the nose down when you are in motored flight.
Yeah.
So let's just think what happens when you release the trigger, the propellers stop. You've no longer got any forward thrust, but you've also lost all that upward thrust.
Yep.
Therefore, the nose is going to go straight down. How do we prevent that from happening? As you release the trigger, you move your weight backwards, and that shift in weight, it's just pitch control.
Yep.
If you start thinking about it in terms of pitch control, rather than something that you've got to do as a result of the motor, I know that when I release the motor, I shift my weight back. It's sort of like I don't even have to think about it anymore.
Yep.
And it's the same when the props come out of the water, because you're motoring around on flat water or anywhere, to be honest. If the props come out of the water, then if you ease off the thrust,
then the nose comes down.
Well, it's
by itself.
No, the nose won't come down by itself. If you ease off the thrust, ease off the trigger, then you get less thrust, and each time it sort of comes out of the water, I should say each time it goes into the water, it's going to propel you forward and up less, and you get a smoother ride. So what a lot of people do in the early days of full driving is they pull the trigger a lot because they think they need speed to motor around. But then you get that sort of kangaroo hopping.
I know.
How do you...
I said a lot, yeah.
Yeah. So how do you prevent that from happening? You ease off the throttle, ease off the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Every time the props go out and in, you're getting less of an extreme explosion, nothing, explosion, nothing. So imagine you've now got half the level of thrust. It's not so powerful.
Yeah.
And everything calms down. Everything becomes smoother, cleaner, easier to control. So,
but that's just because you also are very, very smooth on your trigger. Because I remember like the first few sessions, as soon as I let go a little bit, I let go everything. And then it was that thing, but even more, because it took more time for me to re-accelerate. And of course, I went all in, and then it was even higher. So
yeah,
getting used to that trigger and not like when standing up, not pushing it while standing up and stuff like that. So that's also something you got to learn, really.
Yeah, absolutely. The trigger is very precise.
Yeah.
But considering you've had, what, 4 or 5 sessions on full drive so far, you're already beginning to figure out the nuances and the subtleties of it. Now, if we made it super slow to react, it would be easier to use in the initial stages.
Yeah.
But the trade-off is when you're better, more experienced,
you want that precision,
you want that reactivity, and it really does help. Anything in performance, anything that's going to give you performance has got to have a level of control.
Yeah.
And I think the trade-off with how precise the trigger is well worth it for that little bit difficult to get used to it in the beginner stage, but the benefits from, you know, past that first few weeks and so the rest of your full driving, having that level of control is essentially really important.
Yeah, I totally agree. Plus, really, I like it better that it's not super easy. So it feels like more of an accomplishment. Because like today, the bumps that were perfect, at least in the first two runs, and I still had some trouble, but like I still felt getting better a little bit at the time. First the starts, in the first go, I was like, all right, let's get back up. And I had like 5, 6, 7 tries to get just going. And then on the second run, it was so much better. I could basically like someone say, all right, I'm going to start. And I started and it was fine. And the third run was different because we were tired already. but also there, this progression, that's something I want.
Yeah. Full drive is not something that's going to suddenly make everything easy.
Yeah. Which is a good thing.
Yeah. It does help you to make much faster progression with every area of your falling regardless. But it's not something that at the click of your fingers, everything suddenly becomes easy. It's a different form of foiling. Like I said, it's a different method of getting up on foil. But beyond that, it's a different method of foiling. So you've got wing foiling where, you know, you're constantly using the wing. If you want to ride waves or downwind, you've got to learn to flag it out. You've got to learn to do, you know, what to do with it, how to cope with it. If it suddenly drops down in front of you, what do you do with it? All these things. How do you get the best out of the wing? And it's the same with the paddle. You know, people start off just paddling, then they use it as a, you know, like a counterweight. And then they, you know, jam it in the water and and a selfie stick. I'm not sure you want to strap your GoPro to the props, but
never been done before.
From the point of view of how you use foil drive, I think I'm still learning, and I'll probably still figure out the best way, you know, or you know, better ways of using it.
But it's important. If not, it will get boring super quick. If it were too easy, then it would get boring.
And let's not forget, we were downwinding. Okay, foil drive can get you up on foil, and you can pull the trigger and get you out of it'll get you out of trouble. It'll keep you on foil most of the time, not on all the time. But it can't suddenly magically make you into an awesome downwinder.
No.
You still have to learn downwinding. You still have to learn how to read the bumps, when to pump, when to carve, when to glide, how high to be on the mast.
I heard it was in my ears, like mast height management. Mast height. And it's super cool because that pot, it starts like splashing, giving the splashing sounds. And then it was, all right, I have to get back up. But then, being too high. But it's always impressive. I don't know if it's still the same with you because you're a lot better. If I'm super high on a mast, sometimes I'm like, well, I have to fall now because I'm too high, but I'm still in the water. So there's always some more room. Well, not always, but there's usually a little more room to get higher.
There always is until you breach.
Yeah.
And then there ain't. It always surprises me how high I can be on the mast. But don't forget, we weren't using trench boards. We were just using normal boards. Yeah. You were on a wingfoil board. Yeah. I was on the North Midi. These do not have trenches or recesses for the box. So essentially, the max unit adds 5 centimeters to the mast. I was on an 80-centimeter mast. It's now actually an 85-centimeter mast.
Yep.
And I love that about foil drive. I really do. When I'm winging or para winging, I actually prefer a non-trench board, a normal board, because my 80 mast is now 85. And you know, when you're doing wind sports, the sea state, the water surface is always turbulent. It's always choppy. So I prefer a longer mast. When I was wing foiling without foil drive, I used to use a 90 centimeter mast for winging, and an 80 or an 85 for 82, I think was back then, for everything else. And now I'm using an 80 an 80. My preference is an 80 with a trench board for surfing and everything else, downwinding. But if I'm power winging or winging, which I rarely wing now because power winging has sort of taken over that side of things for me. But when I'm power winging with foil drive, I prefer to use a non-trench board because my 80 then becomes an 85. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas if I'm surfing or just downwinding, I prefer a trench board because my 80 is now an 80.
That's why you're using your board. Which board do you use today? Can you just tell us?
Today I use the North Midi. It's a new mid-length shape from North, which is designed with foil drive in mind. I mean, it's so much more versatile than that, but it's such a good shape. It's one of these very long, narrow board designs.
You said about 45, 50 liter-ish?
It's a difficult one, but I don't know whether they've sent me a prototype or what, but it says 52 liters on it. It's 5.2 and it says 52 liters, but I've used a number of 50 liter boards. And when I took that board out for the first time last week, and I sat on it, it sank way more than my 50 liter boards that I've used so far. In fact, it's somewhere between the 50 liter boards that I've used, and I've used lots, so like Apple Tree, Sonova, Axis. God, there are some others. Jimmy Lewis, others. And then I've also got some Axis Prone boards and Apple Tree, well, there's Apple, 38 liters,
okay,
which feels a little bit more floaty than my Axis Prone Surf 31 liter, which makes sense. But the North Midi 5.2, it feels in float, it feels somewhere in between the 38 liter Zapple and the 50 liter Axis mid-length.
Could you have used one of these other boards as well today? Could you have used the prone foil board as well? Or is that
today? Yes, I could have done. And no, it would have been absolutely brilliant for today, actually, because we were on the Markermere, this inland, huge freshwater lake. And we were always very, very close to the road. And there were, I don't think there was anywhere that we couldn't have got out of if we had to. I don't think we were even a kilometer off the coast at any time.
Probably not.
And I'm used to, on the North Sea, I'm used to going 4, 5, sometimes even 6K off the coast. And then I absolutely will not do it without at least 50 liters of volume in a board.
All right.
And that's still with a on or cross on wind or swell.
Because I was thinking today, if we would have gone for a fourth round or if we would have had a different third round, I would probably have put the stuff on my very small palm foil board.
Yeah.
Not the super small, like 20 liter. Would that have worked as well?
Yeah. I mean, we were finishing the 15K run. We finished with what? I think
60.
Yeah, I had about 60. Left? Yeah, I had about 65% left. You had 60. Maybe it was 65 and 70. Yeah. I can't remember. We were taking our time. We were like waiting for each other. We were sort of turning back and going up winds and sort of filming each other and you know, it wasn't just let's get downwind as quick as we can.
Yeah.
We were taking our time, we were filming, we were just sitting, having a chat, sort of discussing what was going on. So if you were to use that 20 liter board on that same run in those same conditions with the same foil, I'm confident that you would have made it with battery to spare. The thing is, yes, it will take a lot more battery to get every time you need to get up on the foil.
Okay.
But the max of the power battery has got so much capacity for getting up, even with a tiny little board like that. And when you're on foil, the few times that we have to pull the trigger to, you know, to get through a flat section or to correct a mistake or anything else, that's no different.
Yeah.
It makes even no
less
difference.
Because it's got less weight. Mm. Is it harder for the battery if I use a smaller board or a smaller foil?
Oh, well, both will use up the battery slightly quicker than a bigger board or a bigger foil. Bigger boards, I would say, probably have the same impact. Because if you're going from a big neutral or positive volume board down to a 20 liter board, then basically, whenever you pull the trigger to take off, you are having to push not only the board, but most of your body mass through the water. That's dragging through the water until you build up speed so that the board is now skimming on the top of the water. And then it doesn't make much difference. So that will deplete the battery quicker each time you do that. But a smaller foil needs
more speed.
To get up to where it can actually create the lift it needs. And when you're on foil, pulling the trigger to maintain flight, you need to be going higher speeds. So I honestly don't know which will have a bigger impact on battery consumption, but they definitely both will.
All right. Subscribe if you aren't, because I'm going to try that. With that was the first time downwinding where we went today, right?
For me?
Yeah, there.
I've never downwinded on the Markermere or that the whole Markermere Isomere Lake. It was a brand new one for me, yeah.
And it was super cool. If you would have known how it is, would you have taken the smaller, the slim, is it called?
The slim, I could have done it on the slim, but not the first time, no. Because I wasn't sure, never having downwinded there.
No, but knowing what you know now.
Oh, well then, yeah, I could definitely do it on the slim, for sure.
Would you have done it?
Yeah, for sure. Right, so I have done lots of downwinders on the slim.
Mm-hmm.
I've failed on a few of them as well, and I've learned my lesson.
What does that mean, fail?
I've run out of battery before the end of the run.
Okay.
So I hadn't been able to complete the run. And I think all of those times were in Australia where, you see, right, so I'd been, Paul and Ben sent me one of the very early prototypes of the Gen 2 Slim and Max.
Mm-hmm.
And in Amman, it's very similar conditions actually to today.
Okay.
But it's always like that. It's always
sunny, though.
Very sunny. Okay, that's the difference. Yeah. So it's based on, you know, you have thermal winds every day.
Mm-hmm.
So at about between 11 and 12 in the morning, the thermal wind picks up from almost nothing to it could stay at 10, 12 knots. It could get up to 20 to 25 knots. Okay. And it stays like that until 4:30 or 5:30, and then it just disappears. But very quickly from when it starts, you get the same type of wind-driven swell that we had today.
Nice.
Very consistent, very clean, very easy to read, nice, well-behaved, and it's really easy to learn. And I was using the slim all the time and having no problems. I then go to Australia. Well, let's just say the conditions are a little bit more challenging.
Because you got the big ocean swell, or why is that?
Yes, but not only the ocean swell. Some people call it ground swell. But the ocean swell, more often than not, goes at a different direction to the wind swell.
Okay, yeah.
And quite often you've got a lot of backwash coming from cliffs.
Okay.
You've got seaweed to contend with, all sorts of, and currents and... Yeah, it's just our cat's distracting me.
Sorry.
They're right. So the first downwinder that I did with the slim, to be fair to me, it was just there was so much seaweed in the water that I kept on hitting seaweed, getting, well, not just me, but everybody.
Yeah.
They were all on the max. I was on the slim. I was offered the max. I went, no.
I'm on the slim.
Humbled big time. About halfway through the journey, I knew I wasn't going to make it. And I just thought, if I get knocked off one more time, that's curtains for me. And that's exactly what happened. Trav, bless him, Trav basically cut his downwind run short by letting me grab hold of his ankle. And he was on a prone board with the max. But by the time he had towed me into, you know, the only safe exit point,
okay,
he had run out of battery. So thanks, Trav.
Appreciate it, mate. Well.
So he sacrificed his downwind run to basically mean that I could survive.
But it makes sense. You should never downwind by yourself if there's the option of going with a group. Today, it was super cool to see all, I mean, how many were there? Like six, eight?
I lost count because there were two different groups going, you know, running all the time, and each sort of group were doing different length runs. But yeah, you say don't do it on your own ever. I would say you've got to be really careful about everything. And then, yes, in certain circumstances, you can do it on your own. Like I used to do it on my own all the time in Amman because it was so safe. It was always across on wind and swell. There were no cliffs. There was, you know, there wasn't a single point where I couldn't get out if I needed to. And, you know, as long as I kept my phone with me and looking back on it, I probably should have worn a, you know, a life jacket. I do now, because I was using a prone board back then, which is a little bit silly. But I never, like today, I never went more than a kilometer off. Yeah. There was no need to. Yeah. So if I'm going on the North Sea, where quite often you have to go at least 2 kilometers out before you even start your downwind run.
Okay.
I would always wear a life jacket, a phone. I've got a Safe Tracks watch where I can link to the local Coast Guard and Life Rescue Service.
Okay.
I'm even thinking about carrying a flare because of what happened to a good friend of mine, Lucas Schuler, foil only.
Yeah. Ah, yeah.
Man, that scared me when I was watching his post. And I'm really glad that he put it out there for everybody to learn from.
Definitely.
Because, you know, he put himself in a position where a lot, you know, he could have faced a lot of negative comments, but he put the safety of, you know, other people learning from his mistake. And it wasn't like he did anything stupid.
Can you just tell the listeners who may not have seen it what happened? He was in Portugal, right?
Yeah, he was in Portugal. He'd done that run before with Olivia Piana, and he was doing it again with some people. But he got left behind at one point. And this is, let's quickly put it in there. This is one of the big benefits of foil drive, because if you're sup paddling to get up on foil, you want to stay on foil. Yeah, I mean, even the good people, if the conditions are difficult, they don't want to come off foil and wait for people.
As we've seen with Lucas.
Well, yeah. Anyway, he came off foil. He struggled to get back on foil, and then he was behind everybody, and it was, I think, a lot more difficult conditions than the previous times.
And he was too close to shore as well.
He came in, he mistook the exit point. He thought he was at the exit point, but it wasn't. Oh,
that's why he was too close.
Because he came in.
Yeah.
And then by the time he realized it wasn't the exit point, it was suddenly like, oh my God, this not only is not the exit, but it's really gnarly, super dangerous sort of conditions. And paddling out was really difficult. Almost impossible. He did it, thankfully. I mean, he's very fit. He's, you know, he's very skillful. He managed to do it. But then by the time he got to the real exit point, it was getting super dark.
Yeah, and cold as well.
And he was wearing a wetsuit, and he had, you know, all the protective gear and safety gear. There was nothing stupid about what he did. It was just a whole load of circumstances going wrong that led to... It could have been awful, but thankfully it wasn't. And I'm really grateful to him for putting it out there so that everybody can learn from that and just understand how important it is to take every possible precaution and never underestimate that no matter how good you are, circumstances can just throw your skill and fitness out the window, and suddenly, you know, nature and the ocean can humble you.
Yeah, that's definitely, it's always stronger. I was just thinking about, because today I didn't bring it. Last time I wanted to go for a downwinder, I brought my Parawing with me just in case, because I've never done a downwinder before, and I didn't know how long I need to get on foil, how much I would drain the battery, and I just wanted anything to bring me closer to shore. So I thought, if there's a lot of wind, I don't even need to get on foil, but it pulls you a little bit towards shore. So bringing a Parawing, and you said you put it in a waterproof bag sometimes if you go Parawinging with foil drive?
This is going, we've got the potential to go down a real rabbit hole here. How long have we got?
No, I was just taking it as a backup.
Yeah.
Is that something you would do?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, I don't think there's many, if any, times I would ever go foiling without foil drive. Maybe tow foiling, because there's a boat or a jet ski with you the whole time. But every other type of foiling, I don't see... And you've got to weigh up the pros and cons. And for me, there's always more pros than cons.
Yeah.
So what are the things against using foil drive in any situation? Well, the extra weight, yeah, but where the weight is positioned on the top of the mast, it's the perfect point. It sort of absorbs it. Most of the weight, so it's 5 kilos, but it doesn't feel like 5 kilos. It doesn't have the effect of 5 kilos. You move that mass higher up and put it on you, and my God, you feel that mass, and it can throw you off balance. And you asked me about the the power winging stuff. Yes, the reason why I put my power wing inside a dry bag when I stash it in my waist belt is because the way that I do power winging is I use a power wing to go upwind a long distance, and then I stash it permanently and do my downwinder just foil drive to get up on foil and you know, pull me through any dodgy bits. And what I found is that after I've fallen, say, 2, 3, 4 times, so much water has been shoved into the folds of the power wing. And yes, I know the waist belts have got a net or mesh bottom so water can drain out, but it doesn't drain out if it's trapped in the folds of the power wing.
Yeah.
And I've found that occasionally it gets so heavy, like literally 1 kilogram, 2 kilograms, I don't know, whatever, but it really throws me off balance. When I'm turning, when I'm pumping, it feels horrible. So what I do now is I use a power wing, go upwind, sit on my board, pack it all the way into a dry bag, and then put that in the waist belt. And then when I fall off, it can't take, yeah, I mean, it doesn't sense. Absorb water, but it takes on board water. And because it gets into the folds, yeah. It doesn't ever come out again. So
all right, yeah.
That's what I do there. So getting back to your original question, power wing, yes, I would definitely take a power wing with me as a backup in certain circumstances. And when I'm power winging, the foil drive, yes, I use it to help me get up on foil because I like to use a small board. And I'm now on this 45 liter, 52 liter, 45 liter. I'm hoping to use the Zappel 38 liter or maybe even my Axis Prone Surf 31 liter. With the power wing. And, you know, because I'm down to this, what I think is a 45 liter board, and I'm now finding it quite easy to get up on foil. And then I've got all the benefits of this tiny little lightweight board, zero swing weight, really, compared to the, you know.
To mine, for example?
Well, 75 liters, you know, you're going to have a little bit more swing weight, you're going to have a little bit more weight. And
but you've lifted it. It is a lot heavier than
yeah,
the stuff.
Yeah. Wing boards are usually constructed a little bit stronger, aren't they,
yeah.
For all that jumping. So they're going to end up a bit heavier. But I just prefer a smaller board. And I started my power winging journey using a 60-liter board, and I should have started off with something at least. I mean, I'm 80 kilos, 80, maybe even 100 liters for my first couple of goes. That would have made my life so much easier looking back on it. But very quickly, I then was very comfortable on my 60-liter board, getting up on foil. But whenever I was up on foil, I was like, oh, I hate the 60-liter board. And weird, because the difference for me between a 60 and a 50-liter board is, like, huge. I really notice it when I'm up on foil. And now I'm confident in my 50 and I'm moving down. It's just, oh, I love this. I really do.
If you've seen my level today, what board would you recommend for me? Because I reckon that 20 liter, that can be fun, but it's not for the long run. It's not possible to do a downwinder like today on a pump foil board, really.
Well, it is, but you've got to choose your run. You've got to make sure that you're, like today, we're super close to the to the beach, and that there's always exit points.
But I'm still falling too much to use that as a main downwind board.
I think today you would have done it even on that little board because you had 65% left at the end of the 15K run.
Okay, yeah.
And we were stopping a lot.
That's true. Okay. But still, I fell a lot, especially on the last run.
Yeah, we were tired. And it
what
was
board,
messy,
what board would you recommend?
So I reckon a mid-length would be really good for you because you can scale down. And you get more efficiency, so it's easier to get up on foil with less battery usage each time. So yours was 75, and it was a fairly short, fairly wide. What was the length and width, do you know? I reckon it was around about 5'4", maybe, and it was about
but it's super wide. It is super wide,
yeah. So if you went down to a anywhere between 5 and 6 foot length and around about 19 inches wide.
So probably half the width of what I've used today.
Is that about half?
I don't know, but it just felt like it. When I looked at yours.
I think yours was 24, maybe 25 inches wide. So you're going to knock about, I don't know, about 5 or 6 inches off the width.
Not more. All right. It looks a lot slimmer. Yours.
The one I was on, I think, was 18.
Okay.
That is a narrow board. The North Media, the small ones, are not beginner boards. They're quite advanced. But when you're ready for them, my God, they're amazing. they do a range of sizes. As you get longer and more volume, obviously, they get a little bit wider each time. So if you had one that was
I should have tried your board just for the sake of it.
You're here for a week. Come out again and try. I've got so many. figure out which is best for you.
All right.
But yeah, the longer narrow shapes, they're a little bit more advanced to use because there's less stability when you're taking off. But you're definitely ready for it. You don't have to be an expert to use them at all. And that, you know, even if you are falling off for the first few times or even the first few sessions, it's very quick to get used to that. It's like the first time you go down to a really small foil, it's like, oh my God, this is unstable.
Yeah, and then it's
you very quickly, you master it. So it's the same principle. They're much more efficient with their glide. They build up their speed much quicker. Mm-hmm. That's why you can use a smaller board, but get up on foil easier with less battery.
All right. So today on that leg, really good conditions. And I was thinking about maybe we can go to the North Sea once. How would that look like? And what foil and board and safety equipment should I bring?
Wow. I mean, it depends on the conditions. It really does. Now, the North Sea gets very turbulent and very
But it's
big.
Shallow, so the waves should be steep as well.
Well, that depends on the conditions, because the North Sea on the coast of the Netherlands, it suffers from just complicated tides, lots of currents. There's God knows how many sandbars.
Jellyfish.
No, not really. I mean, even the ones that are there don't sting. I've never been stung here, and everybody keeps telling me even the ones that do sting aren't that bad. I don't know where you come up with the jellyfish from.
I just saw one yesterday in the harbor.
Oh,
that's
okay. Yeah. So we have had quite a few of these little transparent ones wash up onto the beach literally in the last couple of days. But that's rare.
Did they break? Did they like stop you foiling or did they slow you down?
I've felt some thuds, but I don't, you know, I've been knocked off by what I think is fish before. So, you know, if you're unlucky enough to be hit, you know, for your foil to hit a fish or a jellyfish, I'm sure that some will knock you off and some won't.
All right. Let's talk about conditions.
Yeah, so the conditions, it depends on the tide and the current and the wind direction and everything else. So some runs, I'm going super slow, like it feels like the foil's going through treacle, and it's just a bit frustrating. And at other times, it's amazing because I think it's current against
wind, and then they get steep.
Current against the swell and wind, obviously, yeah. Then it sort of peaks up a little bit better, and you do go faster, and it's easier to stay high on the mast. So I'm not very good at knowing what conditions, what tides, and everything else. I usually phone somebody up, or I just go and put up with whatever conditions are there, because I don't have. Very busy, and I don't have the luxury anymore of choosing when to go. I have a gap and I go for it, and I sort of do whatever the conditions let me do. So I went out yesterday trying to parawing in the most chaotic North Sea conditions.
Which one did you use? It was windy.
Which parawing did I use? It
like
was
a small
the D-Wing 4.2.
Oh, the 4.2?
Well, it was 15 to 25 knots, but it was averaging 20. And you know, we've had forever and a day, we've had the most gusty sort of from proper lulls to massive gusts. And for the most of the time, the 4.2 D-Wing was fine.
Okay.
But in the gusts, I was literally having my arms ripped out of the sockets. And in the lulls, it was, you know, there were a couple of times where it literally just fell into the water. And you know, what can you do? Parawings at the moment don't have the best wind range. D-Wing isn't bad. It's not the best anymore, I wouldn't have said.
But... Which one's the best?
Oh, my God.
Sorry. Just one quick answer.
No, you can't have one quick answer. It depends
which
what
one
you want
you
to
have,
do with
which
the parawing.
Which one would you have liked with you yesterday?
Yesterday, the F1 plume. Controversial answer. Because it eats gusts for breakfast. It's the smoothest. It's got the lightest bar pressure. I did 30 kilometers upwind in similar it was like under 15. The lulls were under 15, and the highest gust recorded on the webcam thingy, whatever the wind stations, was 27 knots.
Okay.
And I never felt overpowered really? Once, and I've never had that with any other para wing.
Yeah.
So the next best one for absorbing gusts that I've used is the Ozone Pocket Rocket. I haven't used the Fly Surfer POW.
Okay.
POW, POW.
Yeah.
Pop out wing. I haven't used that on water yet. I've used that on land, and it felt like, probably because of the longer lines, and it had a really good angle of attack. That felt like it could, but that's just a guess at the moment. If I'm doing just short up-down wind runs, then the BRM Kanaha.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's
the one for getting more upwind, right?
That's, the Kanaha, the Kanaha and the Ka'a. Sorry about the pronunciation. Yeah. I've heard a lot of people saying, because not many people have used them both, yeah. And those people who have said not a hell of a lot of difference between the two. They're similar in their characteristics. And yes, the Kanaha is supposed to go upwind better,
yeah.
And the Ka'a is supposed to be better for surfing. But, you know, surely that's for stashing away because you don't need it when you're surfing. Maybe it's a little bit more agile. I don't know. But the Kanaha,
you need both, that's for sure.
The Kanaha impressed me for all of the power wings that I've used so far. The easiest to stash and redeploy. The easiest to water relaunch. It's super stable. It's super super good to use for everything apart from when you're overpowered, and then it literally pulls you like a truck. It's so hot when you're overpowered. It's like, oh my God, my arms can't last. The Ozone is a little bit better, but the F1 Plume is just a million miles ahead of any others, right. In terms of
that's super interesting. I really want to try one because this summer I'm gonna be at Lake Sella Plana in the Alps, and I've already managed to organize four different para wings because I want to compare. Because as you've seen, I'm just cruising. I'm not doing flips or any freestyle stuff. So I'm just going back and forth, some jibes, maybe some tacks. And I have the 4-2, the D wing.
Yeah.
The new Enzis. I might get the BRMs as well, and the Ozone.
Yeah,
and there might be even more, and I really want to compare because you see just the pros doing their thing, and it's so hard to tell if that's something for me. And I wanted to get that plume as well because why not?
Well, why not? Just try. This is. I really wish there were more places that you can go and try a range of these things because they are all very different in their handling characteristics. I've not used many. I've used the D wings. I've got the 3-4-2 and the 5-5. The 5-5 is an amazing. It's my favorite for light wind.
What does light wind mean for you?
Well, I suppose from 12 knots up.
Okay.
But if it goes much below 12, I don't know, 10 or below, then it'll fall out the sky quicker than the 4-2. But the 4-2 obviously doesn't have the pull in light winds that the 5-5 does. So the D-Wings, the Ozone Pocket Rockets, the BRM Original Maliko, the BRM Kanaha, Plume, the North Ranger.
Yeah, I have that too. You're going to get that too, yeah.
That really surprised me because, you know, it's a very simple design. When I first sort of saw it, I was like, oh, okay, this is probably going to disappoint me. But it's the opposite. It's, to me, it's one of the easiest to use. It's definitely an all-rounder.
Yeah.
It doesn't go upwind as well as the Ozone or the Kanaha, but bearing in mind that I think they are designed specifically with that in mind. But it does everything really, really well, whereas all the others do one or two things brilliantly and the rest a little bit subpar. Right. But yeah, that. And if you look at the price point of the North Ranger, it's super cheap compared to all the other ones.
Yeah.
And you get this awesome.
The backpack is important, as you said, really is important
like
as well.
Yeah, that's a little dry bag. You roll it up and it's, you know, can't take on water. It's got a great low end. It's very easy to stow and redeploy. It's super easy to relaunch. I think the only negative side is that it doesn't fly upwind as well as the best. But it does still go upwind well.
And know, if you don't compare, then it's as good as it gets.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to buy a bad foil nowadays. And Parawings haven't been around for long. And, you know, if you go with the major brands, it's hard to buy a bad Parawing. Yeah. I don't think a beginner needs to go for the best of the best. And while you're figuring out what style is right for you in Parawinging, just buy one. And
just
then,
get a second-hand one. They're out there now. Yeah.
Get a feel for it. Because I started off thinking, all I want to do is long upwind rides. And now I'm actually, because I'm my own worst enemy. I was like, in my mind, determined. That's all I'm going to use Parawings for, because I don't need them for anything else. And halfway up this 30-kilometer upwind run, there was this really good section of swell. And this was with the plume. And I just thought, okay, so I'll just do a few up. And like, I don't know, 20 minutes later, I was going, I'm still in this section doing, you know, just going up and down, little conveyor belt. So I then carried on going. And now I'm thinking, if I had the Kanaha for that little bit, that's the bit that I would use the Kanaha for.
Okay.
Lots of short up, down, you know, you just hold it. It goes up into your hand like, no, this is the 4.7, and it's like scrunches up into my hand, and it's like, is it really there? Whereas, you know, the Ozone 4.3 feels a lot bigger once I've scrunched it up and I'm holding it. And the lines are longer, and they snag on each other. That's the only bad thing I've got to say about the Ozone Pocket Rocket. The handling, everything else, it's amazing. I would say, if I didn't love the plume so much, and I've got a lot of respect for the D-Wing, the Ozone and the Kanaha, if those others weren't around, the Ozone would be my upwind choice, and the Kanaha would be my sort of short deploying, stashing thing.
All right. Very interesting about the plume, though.
Hey, we need to talk about foil drive, damn it. So let's get back to...
No, I was just thinking about today, because, like, this whole shuttle thing, let's be honest, it sucks.
The what, sorry?
The shuttle.
Oh, my God. We
Like not only
how much
doing
of
it,
that time today was in the car.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, yeah, and it was actually a lot. Plus, also, like the thinking that goes in it, I mean, it sounds simple, but still, like, all right, I'm going to take both our cars there and leave the clothes where and the screwdrivers. And
what happens if you change your mind about foils and, you know, have you got all the right keys and everything else? Yeah, it does my head in. And it's stress that I don't really want to be bothering about. And it was like, the very first bit was like, we meet up with everybody at this central point, and then not everybody turns up. And we realize that some of them are waiting at the furthest point. So, and then somebody hasn't turned up yet. What do you do?
And even if, I mean, the speeds are so different of everyone.
Yeah.
That you would have to wait.
Yeah.
And
some people are using a power wing, some people are using a wing, some people are paddle, some people are foil drive. Idiots, but whatever.
Sometimes.
And, some like beginner, intermediate experts, you know, different distances that people want to do. And let's face it, today we had that super long straight road that literally hugged the coast. The whole, there weren't any,
it's straight. It's one straight line and a couple of hundred meters out, that was us. And when we went back up, we saw the people paddling down.
Yeah.
And that was so cool. Like, hey.
Yeah. That was me like 5 minutes ago. Yeah. So today was a good shuttle run sort of route, but it's still confirmed in my head that I just don't like shuttle runs.
Yeah.
And I know there are so many people out there that just, they can't tie up when they can go out with when other people can also join them for a shuttle run. So I almost feel it's my mission to try and provide people and show people, look, there are options to the shuttle run, because I really want people to get into downwinding. I think it's the coolest sport ever, bar none. And there are so many barriers to it. Let's just try and show people that we can peel away these barriers with the right approach. So learning to downwind, well, there's loads of different methods. And I've got to say, everybody who's used foil drive agrees with me that foil drive is the easiest way to learn to downwind, because once, and it doesn't take long for you to master how to get up on foil with foil drive. Once you've mastered that, then there's nothing else that lets you get up on foil quicker, easily, more easily, or with less effort, and gives you more time on foil. And that's the only thing that's going to help you learn downwinding.
Yeah, totally.
Time
agree.
On foil, doing it.
Yeah. Because I have, like, from, I think it was like in October, I had my first downwind try with the paddle. And I went, I think I did three tries like that.
Yeah.
And I got on foil eventually, just like over the span of 2 hours. I was on foil maybe 2 or 3 minutes. Mm. So that was it. And I was done for the day.
Yeah.
I was done for the day. So then I tried it with the parawing.
Yeah.
And that felt so easy. But if I think about today, and I don't know how many hours we were on foil, but I was on foil so much more than with the parawing even. And if I have the wing, well, that's my problem. But I always flag the wing and try to surf. And one, okay, it's in my way. But I need some time to get it back.
Yeah.
And I don't pump as long. Because today I really tried to pump as long as I could to get to the next section.
Mm.
In the end, when I was tired, I cheated a bit with the motor.
But you were tired.
Yes, that's true. And
you were still enjoying it.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And that's really the big advantage is that you can go for longer.
Yeah.
And it's still fun. And that's why it sucks a bit that we cannot use it in Switzerland.
Well, so, times might be changing. I have heard from a lot of people that there is now, they think that legislation may be coming into place. Whether it takes a year, two, or even longer years, we don't know yet. But it looks like the political...
they will get something done. That's true.
It's moves are being made. But yeah, going back to using foil drive when you're on foil downwinding, and a few people have said to me, but that's cheating. You just pull the trigger whenever. It's actually,
But so is parawinging. If the thing you want to do is paddling, then you should paddle. If you want to paddle and use the parawing, that's cheating as well.
Yeah, yes and no. But the trigger is an instant fix. And I can see there are certain circumstances, and I think I've been guilty of this as well, where I've been a little bit trigger happy, and it has actually slowed my progress of getting better at downwinding. So how do you fix that? It's pretty simple, actually. I'm just really strict with myself now. Ever since...
Have you ever put it away?
No, not yet. Maybe I should do that. That's a really good point. Maybe I should. But the point is I'm really strict with not letting myself use the trigger unless I'm literally about to stall. And yeah, I think maybe I will just put it away or turn it off. And then I can only use it to get up on foil. And then you're actually at a disadvantage compared to SUP paddlers because they can use a paddle whenever they want.
Yes.
We can essentially, what's the difference really? You bring in the wing or you start paddling or you pull the trigger.
Yeah.
It's just another means to get you through a flak section or to help build your speed up so that you can, get higher on the mast and carry on. Yes, it takes less effort. I get it. That's the cheat point. But we were on foil. I'm not the fittest I've ever been in my life. But to be able to do three runs totaling 30K, I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't have been able to do that if I was having to rely on a paddle. In fact, I'm damn
no,
sure.
No, for sure, sure. For sure.
Plus, that guy at the end of the first one, when we'd finished our first 5K run, and the guy who did it, SUP paddling, he came in and he said, "Thank God for that. I can now do some winging." And I was like, "Oh, you're not going to do another one?" He goes, "No way. I'm shot. So literally, I cannot do any more paddling." He'd done a 5K run and he was basically.
And it was
shattered.
Over after what? After not even an hour.
Yeah. So, I'm sure that we could, with practice and a lot of effort, we could get to the point where we could do a 5K or a 10K run. But at the end of that, we would be pretty knackered and not wanting to do a damn thing else. So we've just done, I don't know, three, four times that. And yeah, we're tired, but, it's been a long day. It's not just
But it's
that.
Good. I mean, you want to be tired after a day like that, right?
Yeah.
So it's important. And really, my legs are hurt and I need a lay day tomorrow, maybe. But that's a good thing as well, because if it were, as I said, if it were easy or just, it would get boring and not fun.
Sorry, that's the thing I was going to say. We go off on so many tangents.
Yeah, sorry.
It's a good conversation. But you can use the trigger as much or as little as you want.
Yep.
And like I say, there's this comparison of the paddle or the wing or the trigger. You can train yourself not to use it, but when you get tired, you have the option of using it to get you out of trouble, to get you back to the end point, to get you, you know, keep you safe or whatever. Yeah. So
sometimes I even at the end where I was really done, I used it just like once instead of a pump, because as you pull the trigger, the board gets up and yeah. then it goes down again. Yeah. So I would have probably stopped, but I was like for a pump, and then was I reached the next wave, then I had another couple of seconds of break. So yeah, but yes, it's all up to you, really.
Mm. So you've used 4Drive Max for just 4 or 5 sessions.
Yes.
Can you see yourself using it as a permanent? Be honest. Is it something that you would say, I will use that to get me to a certain level of downwinding and then I'm not going to use it anymore? Or would you see
yourself using it? No, because how will I get up? Well, yes, maybe with the pair. Well, when I'm back in Switzerland, then of course I'm going to use the pairwing. And maybe I just recorded a podcast with Olivia Piana, and she's all for paddling, obviously. Yeah. Yeah. And she's very good. And she said, I have to keep on paddling because we talked about like gear and stuff. And she said, it's good gear. It's not the gear. It's you. So I might get back to paddling also because you're also focusing on like upper body strength a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's good. But I don't have that much time. If I get like in the water with good conditions, it's maybe once every other month. So really, there's no progression to be made paddling.
Yeah.
So I need something to get me on foil. And yes, reading bumps, it's obviously a learning process. Today helped a lot, I think. But then again, if you cannot do that and just like being exhausted from paddling, there's no way that you can improve on that. Yeah. And I want to do that because it's fun. It's really fun. I feel like a surfer. I want to be a surfer. So yeah, that's what I want, really.
Well, I'm obviously biased because I work for 4Drive, and I wouldn't be working for 4Drive if I didn't love the product and the people who you know own the company and run it and work there. But for me, like I said before, is I can't think of a time other than toe foiling when I wouldn't choose to use a 4Drive. But everything else, there is a time and a place, and that time and a place I think is down to the circuit, the conditions.
Yep.
So parawinging, I started to tell a story where I was in the North Sea a couple of days ago. Conditions were seriously gnarly. I mean, it was chaotic. The swell was huge. It was just breaking everywhere. It was, you know, ground swell against wind swell. Well, not against it, but it was all opposing, and everything was difficult. I should not have taken the parawing out then. I just should not have done. I should have just put on the big battery and just blasted upwind. It was only about, you know, averaging 20 knots. Now, 20 knots is really the limit where I used to say over 20 knots, it drains the battery so quickly to E4, to motor against the wind, that by the time you've used the battery, you haven't actually gone that far for, I mean, it's still 2, 3, maybe even 4K. No, 2 or 3. In that sort of 20, 25 knot range. So each battery doesn't last very long. 15 knots and below, I can go 5, close to 6 kilometers upwind, turn around, and I've now got minimum 5K downwinder, change a battery, do it again. I've now done 10K downwinding, plus the fun getting upwind in the first place. But now with parawinging, if it's much over 15 knots, I'll take the power wing out, and one battery can last me so long, it's ridiculous. But then we're into the problem of, in those conditions with the swell being as ridiculous and chaotic, I could not make it upwind with the power wing at all because the swell was just so
ridiculous. So maybe if it's not onshore, but to get out a little bit further out. Because going with crosswind, going out with full drive on crosswind, that's difficult. With the wind, it like pushes. It's easier to get against the wind directly or away from the wind.
I don't think the wind is, unless it's just ridiculously gusty, and then it makes parawinging difficult.
You mean the waves and
it was the waves and the swell and the chop and the current and everything was. You see, the North Sea, when it blows in the same direction for more than 2 or 3 days at a certain level, and that was, I think, day 4 or 5 of northwesterlies, And the city was just, like I say, carnage. And I shouldn't have gone out. I mean, to my credit, I did actually manage to maintain. I didn't go upwind, but I didn't drift downwind either. So I just sort of, you know, packed it away, got up on four-wheel drive and foil drive back to the start point.
You were asking me if I would use it again. I'm going to use it again. And if anyone is still listening, I'm repeating myself because I'm going to put that in the start of the video. Because in summer, I want to get to Lake Geneva and have like a foil drive session with whoever's interested from Switzerland. We're going to have a boat and people are going to be able to come. And also in fall vacation, I'm going to be in Italy, in the south of Italy. And I checked, there's no dock available. Yes, of course, I could learn that beach start to get pumping, but I really want to try to get these waves, the slow incoming waves. I really want to do that. And yes, that's perfect if there's no wind. And that's for sure. That's where I'm going to use the foil drive again.
Yeah. And you could, because you asked me about the slim compared to the max. Now you've used the max, but you haven't used the slim yet. I'll have to try and make that happen for you so you can compare
that would be
the two.
Super cool.
The slim is so lightweight, it's ridiculous. And you've got the same power level, but because the battery is such a small capacity, that power level does drop significantly. So by the time you're 50%, you feel like it's not on full power anymore. I mean, close to it. But by the time you're at, say, 25%, you're like missing at least 20, maybe even 30% of the original power that you had at full battery.
But like so, today, that we had 65% left after that long run.
Yeah, you won't feel any battery, any power sag.
That would have still had 30%.
Total full power. I think the big battery, by the time you get down to 30%, a heavyweight rider would start to feel a little bit of drop in power at 30%. Okay. For me, it's 20% or 10%, depending on the conditions. Then I start to feel a little bit less power. But now the high power motor and the high power battery, all that's disappeared. It's like seriously big power all the way through to the end. But the point I'm trying to make about the slim is that if you're using the slim in the right sort of conditions, then you know you've got enough power for it could be 10, 15, or 20 get-ups.
Okay.
And if you look at it from that point of view, can I do that downwind run in less than the maximum amount of times that I can get up with one battery on the slim?
All right. Yeah.
Then it's the perfect use case scenario for it. So I would say, all right, if it get like theoretically, if it gives me 20 get-ups, I would say, right, I can definitely do that downwind run in less than 10 get-ups. And that means I've still got half a battery for safety to get me in if something goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
If I think, no, the slim could run out, I'll choose the max. It's unlikely that people are going to have both kits because they are expensive. But if somebody's trying to choose the difference between the two, another good use case for the slim is light wind winging. So if you're in a lake that's got super gusty lulls, all that sort of stuff, or you're just worried in a low wind situation, if the wind drops just a little bit, I can't get up on foil, then a quick blast from the motor and you are up on foil so ridiculously easy when you're winging, that's another good case for it. But the one that I want to really just quickly say is that something I've been doing recently, and I'm going to do a big video on it because it's so, in my opinion, it's so worthwhile getting out there to the world. The slim with the battery, with the motor, with the controller, with everything, 3.5 kilos. And it's on top of the mast, so you don't even feel that that's there. It's just like, it's almost like it's totally disappeared. Now, with a long SUP board, one of the modern SUP downwind shapes, you put the slim underneath that, you will not feel it.
Because it's heavy already.
I mean, it's heavier than a prone board,
yes, for sure.
Yeah. And but you know, the whole thing, it's
the
longer
the
swim. Yeah. So you won't even notice it's there. And the fact that it's called the slim for a reason, you will not feel the drag from it either. You can start off training for flat water paddle ups. Start off, I would say, at 80% throttle. So you limit the throttle, the power, limit the power to 80%. And just get used to paddling up at 80%. Then when you're confident and you're not literally hauling your guts up every time you do it, limit it to 60%. Train at 60% for a while. When you're confident, reduce it to 40, then to 20. And then eventually you'll, because giving you just a little bit of a help every time and making it a little bit more challenging every time, you're not only training your fitness in a manageable way, but you're also able to improve your skill, your technique, much more effectively than if you,
struggle. Now that I think about it, it so often just felt like I would need just a little bit more, but I didn't have the strength. So maybe, yeah.
And the other thing is, of course, just doing it before you're trained to do it. The whole thing of, yes, the training gets you there. And if you're a, you know, a very fit, physically strong, determined person
with a lot of time
on your hands, you'll probably be able to do it. And kudos to you, because I have a huge amount of respect for everybody who does it the hard way. But not everybody can do that. So training yourself using, I mean, you can do it with the Max, but the Slim, you know, A, it's cheaper, B, it's lighter, it's more discreet, it's, you know, and then, you know, do you sell it once you do it, or do you keep it as a safety system? Or by that time, you're so in love with 4Drive for other reasons that you probably want to keep it anyway. But yeah, from my point of view, I think this is one of the things that 4Drive excels in, but we haven't really made the world aware of it yet, that it's such a good training tool. James Casey uses it in his really? Clinics and camps. Nice. And when he's coaching, he does exactly that. He limits the throttle according to people's stage of progression. And he really rates it as a teaching tool for helping people to paddle up.
That's so cool. And I know you have to leave. So I just want to address one last thing, because my kids love just going around on foil drive, getting on foil a little bit on their knees. They're scared of jumping on a board, pump foiling, dock starting. So maybe a Slim for them as well.
We've got a few really young ambassadors now, and you know, the lightweight kids can get such good runtime from a Slim. It's crazy. I mean, it's all about weight. You know, the heavier you are exponentially, the battery life.
But you would suggest to use like a prop guard for when kids are using it?
I would always advise people to you know, take all the safety precautions that they deem to be appropriate.
Because like kids, they go out and then they enjoy themselves. And once he was like 500-600 meters out and just like, yeah, they're like, I can shout whatever I want. He didn't listen anyway. So
the thing is, there are some people who use the prop guard for their kids, and there are some people who don't. And that's a decision that each parent needs to make. Yeah. And I think it should really be based on the kid, because some kids just are naturally amazing and aware and being able to, you know, do things sport wise that you just think, how is that?
But you can do that with the prop guard as well at the beginning.
Oh, for sure. With the prop guards, you know, yes, it creates drag and that would bug the hell out of me. But for a kid who's super lightweight and they don't need all that,
and they don't compare to not having a prop guard on anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so it's a bit of a no brainer. Yeah. I mean, having a prop guard for the safety is a really good thing.
Yeah. Sometimes he does. Yeah.
Let's go with the prop 8. Wow. Yeah. Okay. I was saying, I didn't know how old your kid was. When you said kid, I thought teenager, because we do have a few young teenage ambassadors, but they are so good at throwing foiling and winging anyway.
And like in this fall vacation we're going to be on, they're probably going to be on foil drive all the time. So maybe if I can get one session, that would be good already.
Yeah, we'll get you a prop card.
All right. Cool. All right. Well, if anyone's still listening, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Find the first episode with Andrea and you.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere up here in the show notes, wherever. We talked about Olivia Piana. We talked about Lucas Schuler. They're on our podcast as well. You find the episodes on uponfoil.com. And thanks again, Dominic. That was a super nice session, super nice talk, super sandwich, coffee as well. So hope that we're going to have another session this week.
Yeah.
And
sure, let's do it.
Let's do some shopping.
On the North Sea and see what's
that would be cool. Like some carnage. Yeah, I would be up for that. So follow if you don't want to miss that. Cheers. Cool. Awesome. Thank you very much.
That was really cool.